Hey, I'm Danny Levy, and you're listening to Digital Transformation and Leadership. This is the show where we go behind the scenes with today's top business leaders to understand how they're digitally transforming their company. This week I'm joined by Wenbin Wong, Managing Director at GrabFin, where he oversees Grab's fintech business in Singapore. He works closely with partners and regulators to deliver services to Grab's users, drivers, and merchant partners. Prior to this, he was the head of product for GrabFin, setting the vision and the delivery of usable, innovative products that enable social and financial mobility across Southeast Asia. He joined Grab in 2015 and held various roles before assuming his current position, and was the chief product officer at OVO and director of strategy at Grab. My episode with Wenbin is coming up next. Wenbin, welcome to Digital Transformation and Leadership.
Hi, Danny. Nice to be here.
Yes, really, really good to have you on the show. I'm delighted you accepted my invitation and we're here today recording the episode. So just before we start, would you be able to introduce yourself and what it is you're doing for the listeners?
Sure. My name is Wenbin. I'm currently with Grab, and I run the Grab Financial Group business in Singapore, and also the commercial business for Grab in Singapore. Fun fact about myself, I was trained as an aerospace engineer, but I only spent a grand total of 3 years in that field, across a series of meandering and dumb luck. I ended up in Grab as a strategist, and before branching into fintech as a product manager, and then most recently as a business owner. That's me in a nutshell.
Wonderful. So, Wenbin, just before we get into the topic for today, I'm going to ask you a series of 5 rapid-fire icebreaker questions, just so we can get to know you a little bit more. Are you ready?
Uh-huh.
Okay, let's do it. Drum roll. Wenbin, what is your strongest skill?
Hustle nature.
Love it. How would your friends describe you?
Patient with a dorky sense of humor.
Have you ever met one of your heroes?
Not yet. Almost.
There's always tomorrow, right? Has a book ever changed your life?
Yes, in fact, a few books have changed my life. Most recent one was a book called Loon Shots, and in it, it talked about how people with crazy ideas tend to do crazy things and how they thrive in different types of organizations. It had a profound impact in how I pursue work at Grab and how I interact with my teammates.
Oh, that's awesome. We're going to have to put that in the show notes afterwards so everyone can check that out. The craziest ideas are often not so crazy, right, when you talk them through. What's the best place you've ever traveled to?
Cambodia.
Still on my to-do list. I'll have to go and check it out. Awesome. Thank you very much, Wenbin, for sharing that. So today we're gonna be talking about the rise of super apps in Singapore and Southeast Asia. We've got several points to unpack, and I'm really excited about getting into this with you. So just to kick us off, could you share your insights on how you're establishing Grab as the leading super app in Singapore and Southeast Asia?
Yeah, I think one of the things that set Grab apart, and it's very deeply within our DNA, is that we've taken a very localized approach to offering services, in engaging with our stakeholders in each mm-hmm. of the markets that we have expanded into. So looking back across the 10 years of Grab in Southeast Asia, we've always taken a view of making sure that the products and services that we offer are differentiated, and the way we bring them to market are also differentiated. For example, when we first launched in Singapore, it was built around the taxi ecosystem, the taxi cab mm-hmm. ecosystem, because by nature, the infrastructure was already pretty established. So we work around the adjacencies of the taxi industry. Whereas for a market like Indonesia, we've branched out into two-wheelers, Grab bike, very early on in our journey, because we saw that in order for the consumers, for the passengers to move around in gridlock traffic, we needed to offer that kind of services. So it was by that kind of flexibility and hyperlocal approach that we continue to expand our services. Insofar as the as our Grab fin or fintech business is concerned, we've also taken that approach.
Mm-hmm.
For example, in Singapore, we've launched a GrabPay card, a prepaid MasterCard that is launched in tandem with our partner, because the card acceptance penetration in Singapore is very high.
Yeah.
Whereas for a market like in Indonesia or in Vietnam, we've launched a QR-based payment wallet instead, because card acceptance rates are much lower there. This does take a toll on our on the complexity of our operations, in the mm-hmm. complexity of our platform and the technology that we deploy. So we've taken great pains to make sure that across the region, we are operating on a single platform. In a sense that our consumer data, our identity, our transaction flow, most of the infrastructure and tooling are standardized. And at the last mile, in where we talk about the use cases and the applications and the solutions, this is where the differentiation comes in. And it's always a trade-off, and it's always an iterative process.
Really, really some fascinating points there, Winbin. Around the hyper-localization, so I guess on the transportation services, and you mentioned on the payment side as well, in Singapore, card acceptance is very high, so you've got the prepaid MasterCard, whereas in places like Indonesia and Vietnam, it's not as high, so you're relying on the kind of QR payments. If we just kind of take a step back and with the big picture, how do you think about, how does the company think about the, I guess, the localization piece? So before you move into market, what goes into the thinking there around making sure that you get it right for that particular market?
The primary motivating factor for us is mm-hmm. to make sure that across all our user segments, the consumers, the driver partners, the merchant partners, the delivery partners, are able to access financial services more easily.
Okay.
In some cases, like in Singapore, they are more underserved. In a sense, mm-hmm. they do have access, but they are not served as well as they would like to. Whereas in other markets, like in Indonesia or in the Philippines, we do have to get them a bank account.
Yes.
But that's the primary motivating factor, and that's consistent across all countries and segments.
Interesting. And so how long would you take on, typically, how long does the kind of user research or the kind of, how much time do you have to invest in something like that before you are confident on the kind of market strategy? Or I guess it's always evolving as well. Just a bit interested to kind of find out more there.
End to end, if we are talking about a new, entirely new product, say, for example, buy now, pay later.
Yeah.
It will take us between 6 to 9 months from ideation into research, into development, and release in the market.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's quite typical, is it? Kind of a 6 to 9 months.
That's quite typical, and especially in a regulated or semi-regulated industry, this is actually quite fast. So we do have to take time to engage with all the stakeholders, including regulators, our consumer groups, as well as different partner groups, commercial partners that we have to work with.
And Grab, I mean, you've made financial services much more accessible for different user groups. I mean, could you talk us through how you've gone about doing that?
So, for example, let me start off with drivers, because mobility was the DNA, was the first service that we rolled out, and driver partners are very important to Grab. Release a pay-per-use micro-insurance product for our drivers in Malaysia, not just born out of convenience and access, but also by necessity.
Okay.
Because the regulations in Malaysia at that time required all ride-hailing drivers to have access or to have bought into ride-hailing insurance for providing ride services.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this could become a problem for drivers, because if they have to pay upfront for, say, a month or a week, it hits into their cash flow.
Mm.
And a lot of these drivers live day by day, day to day, hand to mouth. So what we did was to partner with an insurer who could underwrite the insurance, whereas we focus on the journey. And what we did was to allow every ride to be tagged on with ride hailing insurance.
Okay.
So it was a pay-per-use insurance, just in time for the driver.
Right.
It allowed the driver to just tack on an insurance mm-hmm. every time he or her provides a ride service. So this was one of the early work that we did for our drivers and allowing them access, not just for the sake of getting into financial services, mm-hmm. but also because it was super adjacent to our ecosystem and allowed the drivers to earn more and drive more with Grab.
And did you see a very positive uptick from allowing that flexibility?
Yes, indeed, because yeah. it just created a seamless transition from before when the regulations took effect and when the regulations went live. I guess the most important takeaway or the success of the rollout was the drivers didn't even feel a big shift
yeah.
Between pre and post.
Yeah, and that's a positive thing, right? Because if you're removing that friction, it almost feels like a natural transition, doesn't it,
exactly.
for the drivers? Yeah,
that's right.
Fantastic. And so the pandemic, I mean, it's still fresh in our minds, clearly. We're not totally over it yet, but we're coming out the other end. And how has the business evolved post-pandemic?
We have adapted very well. We do have to read the market signals very closely.
Okay.
But one thing that we did was to focus on e-commerce, mm-hmm. especially on the Grab Financial payment side. And in that, we push on two fronts. One, on improving ubiquity of Grab Pay. The second, on expanding its flexibility. I'll unpack more about this in a bit.
Okay.
When Grab Pay first came into the market, we were focused on an in-store static QR solution, much like what we had seen in the earlier years preceding us in China and India with static QR payments. Now, when the pandemic hit, all retail stopped, all shopping footfall stopped, and a lot of our merchants and F&B clients were forced to move online. Mm-hmm. So what we did was to quickly pivot our offering, our solution, to go online, and we tried as best as we can to retain the same integration, the same technical integration for accepting payments from offline to online. At the mm-hmm. same time, we also made sure that the contracts and agreements also were able to cater to e-commerce transactions.
Yeah.
So that's one.
Okay.
The second thing what we did was to push consumers into spending online and introducing them for our merchants. So mm-hmm. we were lucky enough to have built up a strong set of consumer base across Southeast Asia. So what we did then was to help to generate these leads for our merchants into their e-commerce stores.
Mm-hmm.
We also saw that, you know, a lot of consumers needed to stock up and refurbish their home office. So at that time, and a lot of these items, such as a standing desk or, you know, computer hardware, were more costly.
Mm-hmm.
So we started to roll out installment payments, buy now, pay later, for our consumers as well.
Yeah.
And these were all released in a way that allowed users the flexibility of choosing paying now or paying later.
Yeah, I guess like so many businesses in that phase, right, there was a lot of innovation and things happening at kind of very fast pace to kind of keep up with the force changes by the pandemic. Has that kind of stuck around in terms of the culture and the innovation at Grab? Because it sounds like there was so much going on in that period.
Yeah, I mean, adaptability is the most crucial word these days, right?
Yeah.
After emerging from the pandemic, we all thought that, oh, now the skies are blue again, you know, the world is bright. But we have since also witnessed several shocks in the economy and several challenges and also dark clouds. What is affecting us affects our merchants even more.
Mm-hmm.
So we've worked hard to make sure that we can help our merchants continue to sell more to our consumers now that the consumer behavior is now shifting back more to in-store again.
Yeah.
So as regards e-commerce back to in-store, we are now working very closely with the merchants to drive traffic back to in-store dining, in-store shopping, our buy now pay later solution activate while it was activated for e-commerce purchases is now also available for in-store purchases.
In terms of user journeys on the platform, there's a lot of different options in there now, isn't there? And kind of that's driven by things like you've got the embedded finance you were talking about there, and it cuts across lots of different areas on the platform: insurance, wealth tech, digital lending, food delivery, mobile payments. I'm just really interested around how you're building out these different services in a regional context.
It is, to be honest, not easy.
Everyone would be doing it if it was.
Yeah. I think the more important way to look at it is mm-hmm. to look at it in the context of the core service okay. that we are latching on or embedding a financial service to. So, for example, like RightCover, we look at it from the perspective, not from an insurtech perspective,
yeah.
but from a user's journey in asking or requesting for a transport option, booking a ride, completing a ride, and then, you know, getting off the ride. And what are some of the pain points? So with RightCover, what we did was to tack on insurance cover on three things for a passenger. We knew that passengers were sometimes unhappy with cancellations from the drivers, either due to traffic or due to mishaps along the way. We knew that passengers want a peace of mind when they're traveling with Grab, especially with accidents or with delays. We also know that passengers want to make sure that, you know, when they reach a destination, they're more or less covered in terms of the estimated time of arrival. So these are the three components in which we try to work with our underwriters to provide cover for.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, in terms of embedding it into the journey, we make sure that we strike the right balance between allowing for transparency, that the user is aware that he or she has opted into this additional cover. But at the same time, once you've opted in, it is there for you. You don't have to, you know, continuously reactivate the cover for every single ride. So that's where we try to make sure that the entire journey is seamless.
And is that always the key thing that you have in mind as well? I mean, you mentioned it earlier around making it as easy as possible for the drivers in terms of removing that friction, but I guess across the platform as well, is that one thing you're always looking at in terms of that seamless flow and how you can get people to move between the different services?
Yes, that's right. And in cases where we have strayed from these principles, we typically pay the price for it in a sense where, you know, there will be feedback from our users where the experience is less than satisfactory, or we just don't see sufficient conversion.
And how do you, I mean, you mentioned you kind of take that feedback on board. Is that a big part of the kind of optimization progress, listening to customers and making sure you kind of take that and then use it to optimize what you're doing moving forward?
That's right. The hardest thing about, you know, rolling out services is removing services or removing features.
Yes.
And that's where Mission 90s can sometimes set in, where you continuously invest resources, consumer bend, cognitive load onto a feature where it's no longer wanted. And that's a big muscle to grow as well, to be able to drop services.
I guess as well, though, you've got to be able sometimes, haven't you, to accept when something isn't working and be able to drop it and either focus on the things that are working or to make room for something new, haven't you? And sometimes you can carry on too long almost, can't you, doing something that isn't getting the results you need.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you mentioned around the buy now, pay later, the integration with Grab and that came in through the pandemic. Is that evolving now as well? Is that changing? How do you view the BNPL integration at the moment?
I think one insight that we've gleaned from BNPL in the market is that we need to make sure that we hold by two principles. One is that BNPL as a payment method needs to be attached to two sets of broader offering. One, it needs to be also availed together with payment in full option. It is a full suite of payment setup that the consumer can choose from, pay in full or pay in installments.
Yeah,
that's one insight. The second insight is that it has to be tagged to an ecosystem or a set of services. In the sense that when we rolled out BNPL, we started off with our Grab services.
Okay.
And that was when we first availed it for consumers and passengers to pay for their rides 30 days later, mm-hmm. or pay for their food delivery orders 30 days later. So it was important for us because this allowed us to build trust.
Yes.
And understanding of the credit performance of the cohort of users that we are offering the service to. Which brings me to my second point on BNPL, which is around trust and responsible credit. We need to make sure that we are constantly educating our users about the need to spend responsibly, not mm-hmm. to stretch overly on their credit. We adjust the available pay later balances for our users based on our understanding of their credit worthiness and mm-hmm. also their ability to repay. And we typically take a very conservative approach.
Okay.
We also make sure that if there are any fees or any late fees to be borne by the users, these are communicated very transparently upfront and in line with the prevailing regulations or standards in each market.
Sounds like a great approach, because you do have to be careful, don't you, with some of these, I guess, these credit services where if people run into trouble, then they then associate maybe the lending with the brand. So I guess you've got to make sure you do things very carefully, right, and buy the book, and that everyone kind of, that communication is very clear with customers up front.
Exactly.
Just changing pace a little bit, in terms of everyday enterprises, I know Grab's been very involved there. Just interested to get your insights here around what you've been doing with everyday enterprises and how you're continuing to support the growth there.
Yeah, Grab by nature is a marketplace. Mm-hmm. And as with all marketplace, we thrive and our entrepreneurs on our platform thrive if we can connect more consumers to them.
Okay.
So we've started out with driver partners. These are, you know, I would call them even as, refer to them as, you know, small business owners, mm-hmm. Owning their own career and life goals. And then we've expanded the spectrum into hawkers, into single store owners, into medium enterprises and large chains. So what we need to do is to make sure that we serve each of their needs are all different, mm-hmm. and we need to serve their needs in a tailored way. For drivers, it's all about making sure that they get access to cash flow and to get access to jobs as and when they need, and make mm-hmm. sure that the whole economics of running or providing a ride continues to work out for them.
Yeah.
And at the same time, they are protected as much as possible from the uncertainties of life.
Mm-hmm.
So we work with our mobility team to provide insurance coverage, critical illness coverage, or medical coverage for our drivers in a sustainable way. For single store owners or SMBs, we see that these companies or these merchants are working hard to grow and expand their businesses. Mm-hmm. So we help them on two fronts. For lead generation or demand generation, our ads team, our Grab ads team, mm-hmm. help with showcasing their products and their services to more of our consumers. Right. Our financial service team then work with these business owners to make sure that they get access to cash flow and working capital in a quick and seamless way that they can use to then buy more inventory or to expand their business for the next stage of growth. Now, what we want to make sure and differentiate ourselves from what these folks can get from traditional financial institutions is on two fronts.
Mm-hmm.
One is on our understanding of their business, the nature of their business, just because they're on the platform, which means we can price their risk more accurately. The second is on the speed of disbursement and the amount of paperwork or administrative work that's required. Because for a lot of these merchants, they don't have the bandwidth or the capacity to, you know, furnish mm-hmm. all the requirements and documentation that's required when they are taking a bank loan. So this is how we try to make sure that we strike the right balance between risk and also speed of access.
Yeah, I guess when you approach it in this way as well, your drivers and your SME partners, they view Grab as a real strategic partner there, don't they, in terms of getting the information, getting the services and getting the support that they need to run their businesses or do their jobs in the kind of in the best way.
That's right. Yeah. For a lot of these merchant partners, they don't even have full-fledged financial statements that they can then bring to a bank or bring to us to to get access to loans, especially those in markets like Thailand. A lot of them are sole proprietors, and they are spending 80% of their time cooking, serving, you know, their customers, which is the most important thing that they should be doing.
Yeah.
And in lieu of some of this documentation, and because they're on our platform, we are already able to see the type of flow that goes through their business, which helps us to build confidence or gain confidence that these are well-run and sustainable small SMBs that then we can help to support for the next stage of growth.
It's very liberating when you're able to concentrate on what you do best, isn't it? The running of your business.
And, exactly.
Yeah, you don't have to spend as much time on the admin and the more difficult side, right? You've got a really good strategic partner there like Grab that can support you with that. That's fantastic. Wenbin, I'm also just really interested in a kind of around maybe some of the key lessons you've learned or the business has learned and how you've been using these to enhance what you're going to be doing moving forward.
Yes, I think one of the two lessons I would like to touch on, one is how we continue, how we have scaled across the markets in Southeast Asia with our consumers and our drivers. And the second lesson is how we continue to build and communicate trust on the platform. So let me go to the first point on scaling with for our consumers. Just developing the tech and platform is only, whilst difficult, is the first big step in empowering our users. When we roll out the services I mentioned earlier, it needs to be hyper-local. And some of this hyper-localization needs time and velocity in which we can test and provide the feedback. Sometimes the feedback comes from regulators as the laws are still evolving. Sometimes and many times this feedback comes from consumer behavior and adoption. We have rolled out micro products that are attached to our core services, and these are the ones that help us to scale very rapidly. Okay. I mentioned earlier about the pay-per-trip insurance that our drivers have to pay for in order to continue driving for Grab. I talked about the right cover insurance for passengers where it's not embedded in the right transport journey. There is one more recent product that we launched in Singapore and in Malaysia, which is also gaining traction, which is partner cash advance for our drivers. It is a micro loan that is attached to or a very or informed by the amount of earnings that they have with Grab. What was the motivating factor for us is that we don't want our drivers to feel that they have to necessarily be tied on the platform for the long term. We want to allow them access to cash support or working capital that they can invest in their own growth or for their children or their family's growth. And a lot of these drivers don't have the access or the credit worthiness to go to a bank for loans. And that's where we look at their earnings for the past 3 to 4 months, and we have a view of the ability to repay and whether we are able to disperse credit to them in a responsible way. And these products have been popular with our driver partners because it doesn't require them to commit to high amounts or large amounts. So eligibility criteria is pretty transparent, and the repayment is done daily from their earnings. So it just takes away the hassle of them trying to remember to pay or having to deal with late payment fees. We've also worked very closely with government agencies. So for example, during the pandemic, our Malaysian team worked hard to adapt our GrabPay wallet for the government to disburse aid under a program called ePenjana, where the intent of the government was to motivate or stimulate spend for in-store purchases. So about 750 million of aid was disbursed through Grab to about 15 million of our GrabPay wallet users in Malaysia. Now, the last thing for especially for payments is to remain relevant and plugged into the ecosystem. Mm-hmm. Because we recognize that for an industry such as payments and financial services, the whole industry is moving and there are many, many players who are all working towards the same goal. So to that end, you know, GrabPay rails are connected into the various national QR payment standards across Malaysia with Do It Now, with Singapore and PayNow, and mm-hmm. in Indonesia with Linkaja. This, in a nutshell, allows us to continue to scale and to remain relevant for our consumers. On building trust, I'll just mm-hmm. quickly touch on how we continue to do that. One is to continue to invest in the tech platform.
Mm-hmm.
And we've spent the past 9 years, 10 years, learning lessons the hard way, combating fraud and scams across the platform. And we've a few years ago, we've launched our Grab Defense, which is mm-hmm. our proprietary security solution for tech and data. We continue to invest in technology like AI to proactively identify and prevent bad actors. We adapt our risk rules and our velocity rules to make sure that suspicious transactions continuously get flagged up. So that's making sure that the platform is continues to be safe for all of our users. For payments and financial services, we recognize that sometimes purchases, especially online, can be subject to fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to make sure that in the unfortunate event that this happens, our consumers are still protected. So there's a free buyer protection service that we have for all our GrabPay wallet users for any transactions that they make online. And this protects them against fraudulent transactions or scams. Finally, you know, we talked a little bit about this for mm-hmm. both consumers and driver partners. I think it's important as we go into financial services and lending and credit, we always take the view that we need to offer credit in a responsible way. Mm-hmm. We do not mislead or we do not motivate irresponsible or overspending by our users.
Wow, there's so much going on, Wenbin. Sounds like the business is really doing some amazing things. I just wanted to come back on one of the points you mentioned around micro products. You said around the kind of micro products, and you shared that example. And you kind of said that the micro products are really helping you drive growth across the region. How do you think about micro products before you decide to add them in? And I guess you said earlier you're doing this quite seamlessly, but how does the micro products fit in against, I guess, some of the kind of the mainstream offerings?
Micro products are idiosyncratic in two ways.
Okay.
One is they're super difficult to build.
Okay.
So for everyone that we see in the market, probably we have to go through brainstorming,
okay,
and, you know, deliberation for four or five of them. The second one is that it is very, very good for user acquisition and engagement. Mm-hmm. But from a commercial perspective, it needs to be able to scale in a margin positive way, because that's the only way it can be commercially viable. It needs huge scale.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you know, it just cannot sustain the kind of infrastructure that it's operating upon. So whenever we think about micro product, we need to make sure that first and foremost, mm-hmm. the core service that is being latched on is already widely used.
Okay.
Say, for example, like transportation, ride hailing,
mm-hmm.
Or, you know, payments, where we have penny saving, save as you spend product, mm-hmm. or for food delivery, where we do have also an equivalent product to a priority cover to make sure that the food order gets to you on time,
mm-hmm.
and without damage. So these are some of the things that we need to make sure that goes into thought of very deliberately before we go into launching a micro product.
Thank you for sharing. I just wanted to also come back on another point you mentioned, on the payments rails that you connected into Malaysia and connected into Indonesia. In terms of the connectivity and I guess, is there other areas that you're looking at in terms of payments connectivity or how that helps kind of optimize the business? I'd just be interested to kind of get a little bit more insights there around specifically on payments.
Yeah, I think for payments especially, we need to solve for three things.
Mm-hmm.
We need to solve for security.
Yeah.
We need to solve for efficiency, which is cost of making a transaction.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to scale for last mile distribution.
Yeah.
So whenever we think about connecting to an infrastructure, we need to make sure that it helps us to materially raise the bar on each of these points.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for all the payment rails that we've connected into, say for example, PayNow and Fast in Singapore, firstly, it allows real-time payment transactions to take place. And it allows someone like Grab and our distribution into consumers, merchants, and drivers to be plugged into such an infrastructure, which reduces then the cost of delivering a transaction end to end. Now, we do need to make sure that as we are hooked up into such a platform or infrastructure, the end user KYC or the end merchant KYB is done properly and in line with regulations, so that we do not compromise the security of the infrastructure. So these are some of the things some of the manifestations of the three principles I mentioned earlier.
And then lastly, again, I just wanted to come back on the, you mentioned around the investments you're making on your technology platform, combating fraud. And again, I was just wondering if you could share any more there around the kind of the technology platform and how you think about that. I think you mentioned AI in there as well. Just to kind of get a little bit more insights there on the tech platform and how you think about that optimization in terms of keeping up with cyber threats and bad actors.
You know, one of the things that we need to continuously grapple with is as we scale, the cost per transaction need to come down tremendously.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's not commercially viable. So there's a lot of optimization ongoing as we think about transactions that are being processed in real time on the cloud, or how we think about having them processed offline or in the markets. That's one. As regards combating fraud and scams, what we need to do is to make sure that our fraud engines continue to be updated and stay relevant to some of the emerging modus operandi of the bad actors. And we work very closely with the regulators and the enforcement agencies to make sure that, you know, any potential weak points or any potential access that scammers and fraudsters can use are plugged very quickly. At the same time, our users will constantly tell us whenever we become too enthusiastic with protection, in the sense that false positive rates then shoot up and transaction conversion rates then fall. So it's always a very fine balance. So this is a pragmatic way in which we are constantly improving on our platform, both from an efficiency, cost, and security perspective. For emerging technology, and I would say that some of these are, you know, very, very exploratory. We've got a very small group of users, developers and technologists just looking at applications of blockchain technology or even generative AI, to make sure that we constantly stay abreast of these developments. Say, for example, with blockchain, we are a close partner of the Singapore Central Bank, the MAS, on a purpose-bound money pilot that they launched last year at the FinTech Festival, to allow transactions to be performed on-chain for a select group of or criteria of services or merchants that then can be used to expand across borders, across networks, and allow for better protection for consumers. So that's on blockchain.
Mm-hmm.
For generative AI, we've done very small pilots on, you know, helping merchants who don't have the capability to, or even the knowledge to put up photographs of their food in on the app,
mm-hmm.
to generate illustrations of their food services or their food items that they want to showcase to our consumers. But we do mark it out very clearly that these are, you know, illustrative drawings, just to make sure that it's also transparent to our consumers.
Got it.
And these are just some small examples of technology that we are deploying, even as we continue to deepen the main bulk of our services.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing all of those different things you're doing and to going into more detail there for the listeners. Wenbin, what is next for GrabFin?
I think for GrabFin, our focus remains on two fronts. One is to make sure that we continue to go deeper and deeper into our existing products. Mm-hmm. Over the course of the past 3 to 5 years, we've rolled out a series of products across 4 different financial verticals, mm-hmm. fin services verticals, across payments, insurance, wealth, and lending. Now, the key for us then is to make sure that for each of these services, like BNPL, like payments, like insurance, we continue to deepen the experience and mm-hmm. the capability. I think gone are the days where we can continue to invest across a wide range or a breadth of services,
mm-hmm.
because that's just too costly.
Got it.
The other thing that we need to work very closely on is to make sure that we deepen our partnerships. I talked earlier about partnerships with the industry and regulators in expanding through infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
We've also launched 3 digital banks, and one thing for us is to make sure that GrabFin and our digital bank, the one in Singapore being called GXS,
mm-hmm.
are closely collaborating together to make sure that consumers have access to better financial services on both apps, on the Grab app and also on the GXS app. So some of these early collaboration that we've rolled out is something that, you know, we've worked very hard the last 2 years for, is to allow mm-hmm. for bank customers or bank consumers to already see some of their balances, the account holdings in real time on the Grab app and vice versa.
Mm.
So now having then established the pipes and the infrastructure and the governance to do this, we can start thinking about what more services can we embed in each of our consumer apps. And this, to me, is one major development track for embedded finance. Mm-hmm. How do we bring bank services into consumer-facing apps in the last mile?
And that is something that's ongoing at the moment, is it? And you hope to have integrated soon?
Some of these are already live.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So this is already live, is it, in terms of the embedded finance that you can see within the app for your bank?
Yeah, okay. As a bank customer, you can see your bank account balance live in the Grab app.
Well, Wenbin, I've really, really enjoyed the conversation today. Thank you for going into such detail about the journey Grab has been on. It's quite amazing, all of the progress that the company's made and what you're doing across Southeast Asia and in Singapore, all of that hyper-localization, the different payments partnerships, how you're supporting your SME partners and drivers in the region, and what you're going to be doing next. I've really enjoyed the conversation, so thank you again for sharing in such detail. Just before we finish, I just wanted to ask you one question, and it's something I always ask my guests when they're on the show. Just really interested to get your thoughts on your career and specifically a lesson that you've learned that you carry with you to share with myself and with the listeners.
I guess the simple caveat is that what worked for me may not work for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So do this at your own risk. But what had worked for me typically in the past is when faced with a decision on career.
Okay.
Either whether it's to change a job or take on a new role or take on a, you know, a very challenging task.
Mm-hmm.
I've always learned, or I've learned the hard way, that when I follow my head, I usually get it wrong.
Okay.
When I follow my heart, I usually get it right. So I'm not sure whether it speaks much about my intuition, or it just doesn't say too much about the way I make logical decisions.
I guess you can have all the data in the world, but you've still got to follow your heart at the end of the day, haven't you? Wenbin, well, how can people get in touch if they want to find out more from you?
Simple way would be to drop me a ping on LinkedIn or drop me an email at wenbin.wong@grab.com.
Wenbin, thank you once again for coming on Digital Transformation and Leadership and sharing all of your insights with the listeners. I've really enjoyed the conversation.
Likewise, it's my pleasure.
You've made it to the end of another episode of Digital Transformation and Leadership. If you're enjoying the show, please do leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. No need to leave a written review. Just clicking on the 5 stars is enough. I'd really appreciate it, as it helps the show get found and it helps those listener numbers grow. And we'll be back with another top business leader to understand how they're digitally transforming their company. The Digital Transformation and Leadership Podcast is a Blue Aurora Media production.